Do it.
You can do it. 11 out. America's great radio, Radio New York International.
We've got something to say. Radio New York International. This is R&I, this is R&I.
Hey, this is 11L Radio New York International, and we just played a couple of tunes off the brand new Papa Chubby record. The flavor is in the fat, and it's a mighty hard road, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce Papa Chubby to the 11L audience. We've played his music over the years way too many times, and if you don't know who Papa Chubby is, let's see, from his corporate website, here's the propaganda. The Stooges meet Guy Buddy, meet Motorhead, meets Muddy Waters, meets Jimi Hendrix, Robert Johnson, a little bit of Cream, a little bit of Zepp, and a whole bunch of Papa Chubby. Papa, hey, listen, welcome to 11L Radio New York International, my friend.
Thanks, buddy. I really dig your intro music, man.
Oh, I got the best jingles in the business, the Pam's jingles.
Those are some old school jingles, man.
Yeah.
AM radio in the 60s.
Uh-huh. That's what it's all about. I've got about 1,000 of them, and they're made for me, crafted by my buddy John Lightning, who also is a big fan of yours.
And right on, man.
Good stuff. So you got a brand new CD. You've been doing this for 30 years, man. 30 freaking, yeah. 30 fucking years. Let's call it what it is. Let's not, you know, pussyfoot around this whole thing. I picked up the Papa Chubby bandwagon about 20 some odd years ago when your daughters were youngins running around during your set.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully they'll both be out of prison soon.
Well, hey, you know what? That works.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking, man.
I figured as such.
They're not getting out. I was only kidding.
I'm still
I'm a comedian. Just put one foot in front of the other and keep on playing the guitar. That's about my complicated formula for success.
Yeah, and you started out as a punker back in CBGB's doing performance art.
Well, not really. That's kind of, you know, people pick up certain things from the bio. I started out as a kid in Queens. I started out in the Bronx listening to the jukebox in my parents' candy store at AM radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became a teenager in Fletcher and Queens listening to Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and all the other, you know, corporate rock of the day. And then I just wanted to play, so I answered Nam the Village Voice for guitar player, and I met this guy, Screaming Mad George, who lived on the Bowery across the street from CBGB's. He was a Japanese performance artist who went on to create special effects for Hollywood, such as The Alien and other things. And, you know, I played at CBGB's when I was 18, so I was introduced to that whole scene. Then I got into the hardcore scene in New York, which I was just thinking about while I was in the shower, how the hardcore scene of the 80s really was about a bunch of kids who were completely disenfranchised from the hedonism that was going on with the yuppies and corporate takeovers and all that crap.
Uh-huh.
And you know, these kids really wanted the truth. The music of that era was so much about the truth, and that's kind of why I gravitated to the blues, because first of all, I was already introduced to the blues by bands like Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and the Stones, and so it was a really easy transition, and the blues seemed honest and true music, and that's what got me into the blues, and 30 years later, here I am.
Wow.
Still trying to figure out what to do.
You're still doing this. I mean, I was introduced to you on Atlantic Avenue in front of the Waterfront Alehouse, and my buddy Sam says, this guy is pretty good. You should come down and check him out. Have some barbecue.
We love Sam. We love Waterfront Alehouse. Waterfront Alehouse changed my life, man, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, and you were doing these free shows right in front on the street, and then the festival kind of got a little restrictive, so you brought it inside, which was actually really cool also, you know?
Right.
So,
it's kind of better inside, I think.
Yeah, I think, well,
it's
walking
it's
by.
Really cool because people get a break from the festival, and then it's like, you know, it's that's the best gig in New York, man. You know, Steve Holly, Arthur Nielsen, me, Dimitri, Edwin. It's like, you know, and it's free, and it happens every Atlantic Annick and every New Year's Day, man. And it's just it's another tradition that's gone on for about 25 years, and I wouldn't miss it for anything.
Thank you. Thank you for being there. I mean, back in the day, Atlantic Antic, you'd see Papa Chubby on one side, and the bar that used to be the Ale House across the street would have something else. There'd be a British chip shop place down the block with my buddies playing British Invasion, and then you'd have
Hank. It was a great neighborhood in those days, and like everything else in New York, it's changed so much now, and, you know, it's but there's still, I think in Brooklyn, there's still a little bit of core of the old-timers, and I really like that. You know, there's nothing left in Manhattan anymore, man.
No,
like, so the East Village,
it's dead.
I used to run, and it's like just yuppie NY. I don't even know if people use the term yuppie anymore, but just rich, you know, rich kids living on their parents' credit cards and first or second-year professionals before they breed and move out of the city, and that's what New York is about now.
It is. I mean, you've traveled the world. I mean, I got friends in France who go, yeah, Papa Chubby sells out in France all the time, and in Germany and England, and, you know, I mean, how are their music scenes compared to New York? I mean, does New York really suck that much?
No, absolutely not. New York doesn't suck that much, but it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, we've lost all the great fucking clubs, man. King's closed, Tramps closed, Manny's Car Wash closed, Lone Star closed, fucking City Winery closed and moved. You know, all that's left really is the Iridium, and then, you know, downtown there's Terra Blues, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of sad, man. I mean, there's some new shit popping up, man. I know that Christine Santelli is doing a new series of the place in the Village. I forgot the name of it, but it's, you know, it's a tiny 60 seat place, and it's just, you know, it's New York is about real estate, man. And, you know, the only reason the Iridium still exists is because they own the Starlight Diner upstairs.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the family owns the Starlight Diner. They may own the building, I don't know, but I know, and the Starlight Diner is a gold mine. You know, you get all these tourists lined up to buy a $60 hamburger. Here's some wannabe Broadway star who's a waiter sing their favorite show tune.
Nice.
I always like, when they're online and I'm loading into the Iridium, I like to always walk by and go, "That sun will come out tomorrow." Mess with them a little bit. But, you know, that whole element of rebellion that was always part of New York, especially in the East Village, is I don't see it anymore anywhere. There's no more underground. And art reflects culture, sadly. You know, the reason there was so much great art that came out of New York in the 60s, 70s, and 80s is because, first of all, there were places for artists to live.
Yeah,
There were crappy neighborhoods that no rich white people wanted to live in. There were quite a few of them, man. You could live in the East Village. Soho, back in the 70s, nobody wanted to live in Soho.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Brooklyn too, man. You know, Dumbo, and even parts of, you know, underneath the Manhattan Bridge over there, man. I mean, I used to live on the other side of there with a bunch of people, right on Flatbush Extension, man. And you know, paid like $300 a month. That's gone now. There's no place for the arts to thrive anymore. And then, as far as the government goes, the arts don't exist anymore. So, it's not a great place for the arts in that sense. You know, you don't see music and art come up like it did in the 60s, you know, when people like Warhol, or even in the 80s when you saw people like Basquiat and Keith Haring come to the forefront. Not that there are still not great painters and artists out there. Unless they're part of the established scene, gallery scene, they don't get shown and they don't get seen. You know, Basquiat did graffiti, man. That's how he got No, so did Keith Haring, man.
Yeah,
you know,
they were street people. They were street people who got lucky, and people said, "Hey, they got talent."
Yeah, and it's the same thing with music, man. I mean, there's not, you know, I mean, as far as rock and roll goes, if you're calling the Strokes a punk rock band, you need an education, you know. You know, there's still a lot of good blues in New York, man, but a lot of it doesn't get noticed anymore.
Exactly. So how do you keep going?
Well, blues from New York never got respect.
Right. It was Chicago blues. It was, you know, Texas blues.
Texas, Chicago, New Orleans.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I remember
a label telling me, nobody's interested in blues from New York. Well, you were wrong, so fuck you.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's so much great blues that comes through New York. I mean, I've seen Duke Robillard many times back in the day. Sean Costello.
The New England scene is completely different. And all deference to Duke. I have massive respect for him. He's a great guy. But that scene up there is very insular, very purist.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those guys got big sticks up their ass.
Yeah.
They're better than us, and if you're in New York, you can't play, and we're the real blues, and all they are is a bunch of fucking white guys with hats.
Duke
excluded, Ronnie Earl excluded, Mike Welch excluded, but a lot of them up there just got this fucking attitude where if they came to New York, we'd fucking hand their asses to them with their hats up their ass and kick them the fuck out back up to Boston.
I agree.
And the Red Sox suck.
Yeah, they do. They do. They absolutely do. You know, it's a tough world. I mean, you pick the right choice, you know, blues, because blues is eternal, you know?
Well, yeah. But the other thing is that the one guy who emerged as the real king of the New York City blues, Lil Ol' Papa Chubby, man. I am the king from the East, the master of disaster, and all this is bullshit. I'm just fucking around.
No, but you are. I mean, you are the quintessential, you know, New York blues guy. You know,
I'm one of them. There are a lot of great people that came out of New York, man. I mean, the Holmes Brothers, Joan Osborne, Bobby Radcliffe, just to name a few of them. And so many people who just really never got noticed, man. So many local guys like Jerry Duggar and Irving Lewis Latin.
Oh, I know those guys. They used to be a blues place in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, called the Muse. And they used to have a lot of jump
blues. They're still playing and sounding better than ever, but for whatever reasons, they never, man, you know, or I'll give you an example. It came up on my Facebook feed today, a picture of me with Charles Honeyboy Otis.
Mm.
Now, if you didn't know who Charles Otis was, Charles was a drummer, originally from New Orleans, right? Lived in New York. Guy was the baddest mofo you ever met in your life, man. Played on some really famous records. The version of Ico by the Dixie Cups, he's playing knitting needles on an ashtray on that, man.
Wow.
You know, Charles was the guy, man, and he was the sweetest, most, you know, always interested in what you were doing, cool people, man. Guy, and this is another guy originally from Chicago who lived in New York, another drummer, Tyrone Crusher Green, Mean Crusher Green, man. Best drummer you ever heard in your life, man. This guy was the only drummer Wilson Pickett would use. Years, all these guys are gone. They got no. They're not even. There's not even any mention of them on social media. Hardly, man. It's so sad. You know, I'd almost like to start a foundation or some, you know, a tribute page or something, just to, like, you know, make sure these guys remember it because they were so important. Howie Wyeth, another guy, another drummer who played with Bob Dylan on Blood of the Tracks and Desire, was a mainstay of the New York blues team. Howie Wyeth was playing blues in New York when nobody else was. When the only place to play blues in New York were Dan Lynch's on 2nd Avenue and Phoebe's.
Phoebe's. I remember Phoebe's. It's still around. It doesn't do music very often. But,
oh, yeah, I know. So, you know, there's definitely a heritage lineage. Frankie Paris, man. Frankie Paris and Cole Sweat. Frankie Paris was this little Italian guy, sang. He had a voice you wouldn't believe. He was supposed to be Tony Orlando and Dawn, but he was too short. But the guy was a staff singer for Atlantic Records. You know, he had an amazing band. So many of these guys, Tommy T-Bone Stinson, who unfortunately committed suicide, amazing organ player, man. Marty David, bass player from New York, again, played with Dr. John and Flaco Jimenez and Buffalo Springfield. All these guys, man, nobody knows who they are. It's to me, that's tragedy.
Well, I mean, you should put a book together.
It just shows what our culture has become, and especially New York, man. New York has really become a very vapid, vacuous city. Vacuous people. And I don't live in the city anymore. I don't even go there if I don't have to, man, because because it's just fucked up, man.
No, I hear you.
Bloomberg really ruined New York, man, because, you know, Bloomberg was a guy who never took a subway in his life, but yet was making decisions for the common people of New York. You know, when you have a billionaire making decisions for the working people of the biggest city in America, it's going to go one way.
Yeah. Well, you got a chance now to have him as your president, you know, another New York mistake, you know.
Well, I must say he'd be a vast improvement over the current conditions. So
true. Anyone would be a vast improvement.
I don't know about that, but you know. Look, I grew up in Queens, man. We knew all about Donald Trump. You know, so it was no surprise that it is what it is. You know, this is actually exactly what I expected to happen.
Listen, if you knew how to invest back in the 70s, we both would be wealthy men. We would be wealthy men, you know?
In the 70s, man, I was like fucking a kid, but whatever, man. You know, that's another story. But anyway.
Anyway, listen, we're talking with Papa Chubby. He's got a brand new record out called It's a Mighty Hard Road. It's a mighty damn good record. 30 years, you know, of blues, rock, and soul. And you keep going, and you like fine wine. You know, you keep getting better and better. And
I work on it, man, and I think you really should as a musician. And, you know, there's a lot of inspiration out there. A lot of my friends who are great players, Arthur Nielsen, for instance. Mm-hmm. Every time I hear Arthur, he's better.
Yeah.
Arthur's almost 10 years older than me. So it's like, it's definitely an inspiration to see people out there and still improving their game. And I think that as a musician, that's what it's about, man. So it's all good, bro.
You made that comment at Brado's that the Black Coffee Blues Band is getting better, and they really are. I mean, hopefully they'll put another record out because
that would be great, and it could happen. You never know. The label that we had initially put that record out that I was on for many years just reemerged with new partners, and I just signed a new deal with them, Dixie Frog. They're releasing my record in Europe, so they also have my catalog, which includes that record. So, indeed, we may at some point put a new record out.
Oh, you own your catalog. Good thinking, man. Good thinking.
In the meantime, I may release that record and a bunch of others that I produced for all these artists in the U.S., which I never did before. So
nice.
I think I may get that. That's a project where I'm, you know. If I stop touring, I'm going to have a lot to do. I'll put it to you that way.
Well, listen, you know, it's music that needs to be heard. And Dimitri is a buddy of mine. I've known Dimitri for way too many years. I mean, he used to serve me my beer.
I've known Dimitri for 25 years, man.
Yeah.
Dimitri's the best guy in the world, man. And now he lives in Beacon.
Wow.
He's up here, man. Dimitri left Brooklyn, too, man.
Well, I'm still in Bay Ridge. I mean, I got a great view. I've got a view of the ocean.
Lucky
I got
man.
A co-op. It was in the family. You know, there's lots of reasons why I'm still here, but and I can afford it, which is the tough part. Which is the where can they find your new CD, Papa Chubby? Where can they find your catalog?
You can find it at www.papachubby.com or at shows right now. It's not going to be commercially released until February 14th in Europe and March 2nd. In the U.S., at which time you can find it on all outlets, Amazon, iTunes, CD Baby, blah, blah, woof, woof. You can probably stream it on Pandora and Spotify and help them to rip me off further from ever making any money. And that's it.
Good stuff, man. And you went on major record labels, and you got screwed by the majors, and, you know, you're doing it yourself, and that's the way to do it.
I really got screwed by anybody at the end of the day. I didn't get screwed by Sony at all.
You're the lucky one. You're the lucky one.
And, you know, people, everybody wants to say that. Everybody, from the minute they signed me, I made a record with Tom Dowd, the greatest record producer of all time. They pick up my option for a second record to make the next record with Dowd. We went into pre-production, and then they decided they were done. And so they paid me not to make a record. As soon as that happened, people in New York were going, Papa Chubby went crazy. Went up to the A&R guy's office and threatened him. Never happened. You know what? Michael Kaplan, the guy who signed me to Sony, thank you so much. You did me the biggest favor in the world. Because I got in that world, I got out of it. Because when you're on a major label record, all you are is a sheep. That's it, man. You're a product. And that goes for the A&R guys too, man. You'll see a guy who signed, you know, Frankie LaRocca, who was a great guy. Staten Island signed the Spin Doctors, played with David Johansen, drummer, mm-hmm. played with Bo Diddley, right? When I was up there, he said, "You see this? Next week, my desk is going to be out in the hall." And that's how it goes with the majors. They have no loyalty. So, you know what? They
did you right. They did you right.
And then I went to Europe for a bunch of years, and it was great. And the only problem in this business is that you got to chase your money, man. But it's that way in every business. I spend a lot of time chasing my money, man. And sometimes it's more time than the money it's worth chasing. So
I hear you.
Maybe I'll find a nice lawyer who wants to work pro bono to hook me up. Come on, David. You must know somebody.
I must know a Jew lawyer somewhere, you know?
Yeah. But look, it's changed, man. You used to want a Jewish doctor. Mm-hmm. Now you want an Indian doctor.
Right, exactly. So when you go on tour, when you go overseas, do you bring a band or you have a band out overseas?
No, I always bring a band with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you've got great musicians. You've got great musicians always backing you up. And, you know, I was talking to Dimitri during the show, and I said, "How often do you guys rehearse for the Black Coffee?" He goes,
"Oh, we never rehearse."
He says, "We never." I said, "Well, that's what keeps you in check, because you want to be the guy who doesn't fuck up." And he goes, "You're absolutely right. Absolutely right."
It's like putting on old shoes. Hey, listen, buddy, I got a book, man, but it's been great talking to you, okay?
Hey, Papa Chubby, thank you very much for joining us here at 11LR9. Right, I'll see you soon, buddy.
Say hi to Effie for me. See you later.
That I will. Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.
You get the R&I. Charge out of
Dave the Boogeyman on R&I.